This is the Israel Connection on JA Community Radio, broadcasting live on 88 FM and streaming over the internet at j-air.com.au. My name is David Schulberg, bringing you the 350th episode of this weekly radio program that provides analysis and insight with important interviews and discussion about Israel. Stay tuned for a couple of surprises later in this show, in celebration of 10 years of presenting the Israel Connection on J-Air. Adam Butt of counsel, instructed by Levitt Robinson solicitors, will be imminently launching class action proceedings to protect and defend Jewish students, academics and staff at the University of Sydney and seek redress against the propagators of anti-Semitism. To begin with, I'm speaking about this class action with senior partner Stuart Levitt, and the community is being exhorted to support it financially. Stuart is known as one of Australia's leading practitioners in securities class actions and banking finance and insolvency litigation, having instigated and conducted the Storm Financial litigation against major banks. I'd like to welcome Stuart Levitt to the Israel Connection. Very nice to have you on the show, Stuart.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
Stuart, can you tell me, how did it come about that it was decided to mount a class action to be brought by Jewish students and academics against the University of Sydney?
And members of staff. Shenanigans at the university have been not just a game, but they've been threatening, and students and academics and staff members have been intimidated and, to a large extent, terrorised by the antics of the campers and the threats and the racial vilification and declarations of support for the elimination of the Jewish state and its replacement with an Islamist state, reflected in the sentiments which were expressed the weekend before last by Hizb's Ut-Tahir, who have infiltrated the encampment and who have basically hijacked the Stand Up for Gaza protest movement.
So you know that they are essentially have infiltrated the students' group at the university and that they're really running the show?
There's a lot of evidence for that, and they actually turned up in full garb and regalia, and they've made no secret of who they are and what they stand for and their values, and we have recordings made of statements made at rallies where they not only talk of Palestinian state from the river to the sea, but with it being a nation of faith. In other words, a nation where the Islamist faith is absolute. Hizb Ut-Tahir shares the values of ISIS, and those who think that Hamas, which by the way has been scheduled as a terrorist organisation under the Cold War Crimes Act, those that think Hamas is akin to the PLO, which was the Palestinian Liberation Organisation, should think twice, because Hamas means the Islamist resistance movement, and Hamas' agenda is not for a Palestinian state, but for an Islamic state. And in conjunction with Hizb ut-Tahir, what they're looking for is a caliphate which embraces what is today Israel and hopefully will be tomorrow Israel. But if the ignoramuses at City University and the allies of Hizb ut-Tahir have their way, there will be no Israel and there will be no Jewish state. Jewish students have been, and academics have been, isolated and effectively intimidated by the presence of these people and the open hostility and declamatory insults that have been hurled at Jewish students and academics, and which to deny to Jewish students and academics the opportunity to express their political views and for their political and conscientious interest to be recognised and expressed on an equal footing with other members of the community.
Yeah, well, there's no question you've got good reason to be following this class action. Now, what legal team have you assembled to run this case when it gets to court?
we're working with Adam Butt, who almost single-handedly brought an action against the Victorian government and successfully held them to account for anti-Semitism in a decision which resulted in a decision by the now Chief Justice of the Federal Court, Debbie Mortimer, which followed a full trial of the issues. Our firm has been in the forefront of human rights cases and possibly the most important case to date, which was the matter in which Lex Wotton, on behalf of the Palm Islanders, took on the Queensland government over the state of emergency, which was proclaimed after an insurrection, as one might call it, against the Queensland government following an Aboriginal death in custody, which was being effectively hushed up by the coroner's office and by the Beattie government. And we held them to account, and after a trial, there was a 560-page judgment, and the community which had risen up against the Queensland police was actually compensated. They received $30 million back in 2016. Sorry, the settlement was achieved in 2018, but the lead applicants won their case in 2016. We've run that case. We're currently running a matter before the Federal Court in West Australia for juvenile detainees as young as 10 who have been treated inhumanely by the West Australian Department of Corrective Services. That case is very much concerned also with disability discrimination. So we're a firm which has been in the forefront of human rights, and one of the matters which I think is most attractive about the fact that it's our firm with Adam Butt that's running this case is that we're not single-issue people. We're not people that are only concerned with what happens to Jews. We're concerned with what happens to the entire community, and our focus has been on infringements of human rights, whether it's against Jews, against Indigenous people, whether it's against disabled people. And we're not a single-issue firm. Although I had a background in the Jewish community, in Jewish communal politics many years ago, I've abstained from being involved for the last 40 years. 40 years ago, I was the Secretary of the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies, and 40 years ago, I was about 38 years ago, I was the Secretary of the Overseas Jury Committee of the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies, and before the Australian Jewish Welfare Society became Jewish Care, I was the Secretary of the Australian Jewish Welfare Society, and I was also appointed by the New South Wales government to represent the Jewish community on the Equal Opportunity Tribunal of New South Wales back in the 80s. My focus is effectively based upon the teachings of Rabbi Hillel. If I'm not for myself, who will be for me? And if not now, when? And if not me, who? Effectively, we have an obligation to stand up for our community, and the Jewish community is becoming isolated in the world in a way that is redolent of the position of the Jews in 1938 when they convened the Evian Conference in June 1938, and because it wasn't in anybody's political interest to take in Jewish refugees, and Jews were just an asterisk in the world in terms of their numbers and their ability to determine outcomes in elections. Effectively, we were consigned to the gas ovens of history.
Yes, that's the history we have, and you certainly have the credentials from what you've been telling us to push this matter as far as it needs to go. I want to ask you, is the claim being made based on breaches of Australian laws, or is it a matter of the university having failed to properly implement its own rules?
It's a combination. It's based on breach of contract, breach of the university acting outside, beyond its powers in some instances. Also, it's a breach of its duty of care owed to students and academics to provide a safe place for them to work and study. But additionally, it's based upon legislation, which is the Racial Discrimination Act, Racial Vilification, permitting and tolerating racial vilification, contravention of Section 9 of the Racial Discrimination Act, which we're denying Jewish students and academics and staff the right to enjoy their political rights on equal footing with the rest of the community based upon their race. The courts have recognised the Jews as a race for the purpose of the Anti-Discrimination Act, or because race also extends to national or ethnic origin, but there have been precedents for that, the Jews to be so recognised. It's a broad approach, but it will be it'll have very specific targets. We're not going to take a scattergun approach to the litigation. We'll ensure that each cause of action is finely honed and well targeted, like IMDO, effectively, except we won't be acting in a defensive capacity, but an offensive capacity.
Personally, I have an exception to the classification of Jews as a race, because this is exactly what the Nazis did in their genocidal campaign in the Holocaust by classifying the Jews as a race, which was.
But I think that I prefer to say that what the Jews are is defined by the other. You know, Jean-Paul Sartre wrote a book in 1944 called Anti-Semite and Jew, and Sartre and Simone de Beauvoir, although they were extreme leftists, they both took it upon themselves to adopt a Jewish girl who was a survivor of the Holocaust and bring her up in the Jewish faith. In his book Anti-Semite and Jew, Sartre effectively says that Jews are defined by others, and if there were no Jews, and where there are no Jews, anti-Semites invent them. And in societies where there are no Jews at all, other people within the community assume the status of Jews and they're persecuted in like manner. So that every society needs its Jews, and we are the people who are, they're either Jews or whipping boy to a large extent. In Australia, notwithstanding all the contributions and achievements which are continuing, the fact is that there is still a lot of anti-Semitism, and the way in which people treat Jews is as some sort of mystical group that they've invented, and they impute to us all the traits of their fantasies. And to that extent, we have to take on the fact that we have been cast as a race, whether we are truly a race or not, but we are a race for the purpose of identifying discrimination under the Act, and the courts have recognised that.
So when you say under the Act, are these state laws or federal laws?
Federal laws, Racial Discrimination Act. State laws have also assumed the same concept, that Jews are a national ethnic group, which is the effectively what constitutes a race for the purpose of that legislation.
So can you tell us about any of the claims of the lead applicants in this class action, or is this...
I think we don't want to go into intricate detail, but effectively, I mean, students stay away from the campus out of fear. They're not free to walk everywhere on the campus because of fear of harassment, particularly people who are identifiably Jewish. Their classrooms are invaded by propagators of hate speech with the authority and consent of the university. The university is supposed to be a great time in a young person's life, and many people, including myself, look back on at my undergraduate years as possibly the most pleasurable of my my entire existence. And these Jewish kids are being denied that pleasure. And first of all, many of them had to put up with lockdown and COVID, and now they're living in terror. And the kind of atmosphere that's been engendered at Sydney University has been reflected in what happened this morning, because I've just seen a news flash that somebody was stabbed at Sydney University by a lone wolf, possible terrorist, a 14-year-old boy. So this is what happens when you breed hate and tension and venom in a community, when you create a toxic environment, you give rise to intercommunal violence.
Yeah, well, I've interviewed a number of students during the course of these protests, these encampments on universities. One at Sydney, who was involved with the setting up of the Shalom campus in against the pro-Palestinian campus efforts in Queensland, and one at Melbourne. Two of them gave their names, and one decided after his advice from his family that it'd be better if he didn't give his name. But that's the nature of it. I see from the document you produced that there will be cases probably of some applicants who prefer not to disclose their names for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So what are you aiming to claim from the university as recompense for their mismanagement of these anti-Israel protests and the concomitant incidents that you've been describing, the harm done to the well-being of Jewish staff and academics and students on campus?
There's an opportunity under the legislation to claim damages, and of course we will. But in addition to that, we would like to see a protocol established for how these kinds of situations are dealt with and how Jewish students are protected and their space isn't invaded and they're not subjected to unwanted incursions into their emotional and personal integrity. For example, by rabid fanatics going to their classrooms and interrupting lectures with the permission of the university to promulgate what is effectively anti-Semitic garbage and under the guise of being pro-Palestinian. It's perfectly possible to express solidarity with the suffering of the Palestinian people. It's personally possible to support the birth of a Palestinian state without being a rabid anti-Semite or advocating that that state exists at the expense of Israel and that Jews be wiped off the face of the earth, which is effectively the campaign that's being waged under the guise of Stand Up for Palestine.
So would the damages filter through to the applicants who were in the class action? Is that where they...
It would filter through to all of the lead applicants and also to the group members who are defined by description. So in other words, it would be an opt-in class action, so you won't have to make a conscious decision to participate. You will be automatically in unless... If you're described as a person who's covered by the description of a group member, but if you want to opt out, you'll be given the opportunity to opt out. If you opt out, you won't be bound by the decision of a court or by any settlement, but you also won't participate in any benefit that accrues, other than if it accrues as a result of an agreement with the university as to a new protocol or arrangement which will apply to everybody in the event. But one of the great concerns I have is that this, of course, is not isolated to City University. There's been other universities around Australia and around the world, including and particularly in English-speaking countries. And it seems that there has been an infiltration of Islamist money, which has been attracted to, for example, Oxford University has been virtually taken over by pro-Palestinian interests for decades now. And the head of the School of Social Sciences at Oxford University, Michael Spence, was brought in to become the vice chancellor who immediately preceded Michael Scott. And one of his main achievements was to attract Arab money to university campuses. Now, the point is that money doesn't come without strings attached. And one of the great shortcomings, I think, in Australia, and not just in Australia, I might add, in Australia, because the universities are so heavily government-funded and also under the control of the education department, ultimately, at the federal level, It seems to me that universities should be required not only to disclose how much money they have and the generic nature of the sources of funding, but they should be required to disclose who provides the funding to the universities, who are their major donors, who are their minor donors, whether there are any conditions or contracts or understandings which were brought into existence in conjunction with those donations being made, and furthermore, whether well, and secondly, it's extremely important that students and academics should know this, because whether they want to teach or attend that university is a matter which they're entitled to determine for themselves with the benefit of full information. And I wonder if we knew all the people or all of the organisations who donated to City University, whether a lot of the students who enrolled there would have actually persisted with that enrolment or chosen to go to UNSW or another campus instead. It's very concerning that that there are suggestions that I've read that the University of Sydney has substantial benefactors amongst people who are either Islamists themselves or receive their funds from organisations or associations which may have Islamist roots or be even associated with organisations like Hizb or Tahrir or Hamas and so forth.
Well, the university's Muslim Student Association had a victory, they said, because they've actually got the university to agree to disclose information in terms of any weapons manufacturers that are supporting Israel that are connected with the university in some way. And the trouble is that, a lot of these other disclosures that would be good to see in the open, coming up in the open, won't. Why can't the Jewish community be pushing for full disclosure that shows the full balance sheet, which would
That's right. Not just the
show the
full
whole
balance
story?
sheet. Yeah, not only the full balance sheet, but who were the donors,
Yes.
and how are those donors constituted, and what are their links? These are matters that ought to be investigated as well. If you listen to the rally of the spokesman for the Muslim Students Association, they were, notwithstanding that they were dressed in fundamentalist garb, they all spoke with Australian accents, and you have to wonder about Australia's immigration policy over the last 30 to 40 years, because some of these people are already second generation. I remember John Howard brought in a test for new immigrants to question them as to whether they knew who Sir Donald Bradman was, which people thought was a bit superficial. But back in the 90s, I recall during the Hawke Keating government and just after the end of apartheid, there was in 1991, by this stage, I think Keating became Prime Minister in December. But the South African immigrants who were approved, who already had their visas approved, then had them cancelled if they unsatisfactorily answered a racial attitudes test. So that if they said that their main reason for coming to Australia was because there are no blacks here, or they wanted to get away from the blacks, their visas would be cancelled. Now, I've acted for a lot of Muslim clients. I have a lot of Muslim clients. I have some Muslim employees as well, who are delightful people. However, they don't have the values of the people that were on the university campus. And I can say to you that there are a lot of trigger questions you could ask for a prospective immigrant. We could interview them and we could identify how they reacted. For example, the question, what would you do if you found out that your wife was having an affair with an Aussie, or if your son was homosexual? They're the sort of questions we should be directing to find out just how fundamentalist these people are, well, before we let them to the country, because We are admitting to Australia people that have values that are entirely foreign to Australia, but unfortunately, there's a million Muslims in Australia now. Many of them are quite extreme. You only have to look at the results, for example, in the gay marriage referendum to see that wherever there were concentrations of Muslims living, the vote in favour of gay marriage went well against the trend. I saw that Senator Fatima Payne today from the Labor Party, who voted for the Greens on the immediate recognition of a Palestinian state, had a go at Penny Wong for delaying the introduction of gay marriage by initially opposing it with the Labor Party. And what an irony that somebody that holds herself out as a Muslim who wants to see an Islamic state in the state of Israel, replacing the state of Israel, would banter about gay marriage, because there are plenty of gay Palestinians who are refugees to Israel. If you're a gay person living under the Palestinian Authority openly, or in Gaza, your days are numbered, and you're going to die. You're going to come to a very sticky end. Just to see all these Aboriginals who are protesting in favour of the Palestinians. I mean, these people that are standing there recognising the traditional owners of the land and the Gadigal nation won't even give the Aboriginal people a voice in Parliament, and here they're calling for the eradication of the State of Israel and its replacement by a Palestinian state. What hypocrisy. The hypocrisy of this group of left-wing lunatics and hypocrites boggles the mind. I mean, I was a protester in favour against the Vietnam War. I was in the anti-apartheid movement. There are legitimate causes and there are legitimate protests, but you have to be consistent. You can't be there campaigning for a Palestinian state when you won't even enter into a treaty or even give a voice to the Aboriginal people, and at the same time they utter this absolute BS about recognising the traditional owners of Sydney University, for whom they don't really lift a finger.
Well, you were reading my mind a minute ago when you brought up Senator Payman, who I don't know how she reconciles a party that believes in gay marriage and still remains in that party.
Sure,
it's many inconsistencies there.
Yeah.
I interviewed Julian Lisa only a few weeks ago, and as you're well aware, he's trying to introduce a judicial inquiry into anti-Semitism on university campuses. Mm-hmm. If this was to gain traction and come into gear, would that have any impact on what you're doing?
No, it's a parallel course. And, you know, one of the big problems with all these Royal Commissions and Senate inquiries is that they are a catharsis and a safety valve, but they actually diffuse any anger in the community by diverting it into these channels. So that, for example, after the Banking Royal Commission, the banks just went back to doing what they were doing before. Nothing really changes. You have a Royal Commission, and the Royal Commission is the greatest diversion. Instead of people taking action and actually getting runs on the board, they just talk a lot about it, and there's recommendations which aren't carried into effect because they're not considered to be politically beneficial to the ruling party to introduce them because of the various interests that to whom they have to pander. So that it's effectively just throwing pearls to swine.
Mm-hmm. This class action is going to cost money, there's no doubt about it, and produced a kind of a simple budget to indicate what's required, and you're putting this out to the community for its support to be backing the campaign, because this could be a drawn-out matter, as we saw with what Adam Butt did with the Brighton Secondary School case. This went on for quite considerable time, and you guys need to put a bit on the table, don't you?
That's not the only reason why we have the budget. It's a very reasonable and low budget, and also both the council and we have elected to take 30% on a contingency and 70% to be paid. But one of the reasons why it should be done in this way and why there should be a liability on the lead applicants to pay legal costs is if there isn't and we win, then City Diversity gets off scot-free, because an unsuccessful respondent only has to pay the applicant's costs if the applicant was liable to pay costs in the first place. If there was no liability on the part of the applicant to pay costs, then the respondent gets off scot-free without having to pay any costs. That's why it's important that there is that liability. And if there weren't that liability, whilst the applicants would be at risk of an adverse cost order in favour of the university, if they were to lose, Sydney University would not have similar exposure.
Give my audience an idea of what they can do if they want to put something into the coffers, so to speak, to enable you to carry out this class action.
Well, they can access our website or the Class PR website, that's CLASSPR. If they Google Class PR, they'll find it very easy to get the website. Then it's possible to make a donation to the Georgados Foundation, which is fully tax deductible, because it's within the objects of the Georgados Foundation to be engaged in facilitating access to human rights litigation of this kind. The Georgados Foundation only charges a 3% handling fee.
Yes.
On the funds.
We want to encourage strong support for this. We can see that we can't depend on the authorities, the police, to be doing the sorts of things that we would have expected them to do in the face of what we've been confronted. As you've been indicating, I suppose, by what you've been saying, it's up to us. There's nobody else who's going to stand for us except ourselves.
That's right. And I mean, the fact is we found that historically, and you see now that there's a great tension in the Labor Party because they don't know what to do. On the one hand, they'd probably like to vote for the Greens resolution. Then some seats in inner city Melbourne and Sydney will be jeopardised, and there's also a lot of Australians will be confronted by the scenes that were at City University, not just Jewish Australians, by the impression that fundamentalist Islamic groups have hijacked one of Australia's major universities and probably some of the others as well. They don't want to see people that believe in the caliphate and ISIS who are having a significant impact on Australia's domestic or foreign policy or educational policy. So it's not just Jewish people. And they know the Labor Party realises that they can't just pander to the people in the 11 electorates where there's a high concentration of Muslims, which are all under the ALP. On the other hand, the Liberals are obviously standing with us because they have nothing to lose. But if international policy and the Jews shifts against us, the world's become a pariah, as is certainly possible. We shouldn't forget that it was the Menzies government that was responsible for keeping Jews out of Australia at the beginning of World War II. Keeping Jews out of Australia was a bipartisan policy. There was no one that spoke up in our favour during that period. The De Niro, where people will know the story, the De Niro internees and so forth, votes were turned back and we were treated as enemy aliens, even as refugees during World War II. We can have no lasting confidence in any country in the world standing by us indefinitely. There's a book which I commend to everybody called Those Angry Days. In September 1941, 75% of Americans, this was just before Pearl Harbor, 75% of Americans were against providing any assistance to Great Britain in the war against Germany. That was 3 months before Pearl Harbor. And they should also remember that in the lead up to World War II, Stanley Baldwin, a British Prime Minister, Conservative Prime Minister, allowed the black shirts under Sir Oswald Mosley to march through the East End of London and protected them in that march. Anti-Semitism can be bipartisan, just as over the years since the war until October the 7th, being pro-Israel and supporting the Jews and being against anti-Semitism was bipartisan. But political forces shift, and we're in a position of peril of the world, and we have to stand up for ourselves, and we also have to take advantage of the fact that we should be thankful that Attorney General Dreyfus had passed through Parliament in December 23 legislation which has reinforced the protections under at least the criminal law with respect to displaying terrorist symbols. So that the display of a Hamas flag is a criminal act.
We're part of an older vintage, you and I, Stuart. We were growing up that the situation would come to this, but here we are today talking about something that we would have never thought would materialise in Australia, but it is, and we need to be doing something about it. There's no question.
No, I 100% agree. I think that this is that we can't afford to be complacent. And people say, what if you bring this case and lose? And I say, the status quo is totally unacceptable. We cannot accept the status quo. And I can assure you we won't lose. Apart from ourselves, there are many stellar Jewish senior counsel to whom we will have access. And if there's any need to augment the team, I can assure you that we wouldn't hesitate to do so. There are many great Jewish and non-Jewish counsel who would gladly assist in this matter, and we will certainly not hesitate to call on them if should we think it appropriate to do so.
It's very important work that you're doing, and I hope that the community rallies behind the campaign. We saw that with the Brighton secondary case. It might have been slow to begin with, but when the case got into its full swing, I think we saw a lot of people coming to the court and voicing a lot of empathy with what was being done, and we were successful there, and let's be successful again this time.
Absolutely, and thank you very much for your solidarity.
I've been speaking with Senior Partner Stuart Levitt from Levitt Robinson Solicitors about a class action being launched to protect and defend Jewish students, academics and staff at the University of Sydney and seek redress against the propagators of anti-Semitism. Donations to this important initiative can be made by going to the Georgatos Foundation website. Georgatos is spelled G-E-O-R-G-A-T-O-S. And making a donation there to the Sydney University Prospective Class Action. I promised that there would be a couple of surprises toward the end of my 350th show this week. Here comes the first, a joint interview with another JAIR presenter, Ronen Martin Cohen, in Hebrew. Hebrew speakers sit back and budding Hebrewists sharpen your ears. אנחנו עושים משהו אחר היום, זה תוכנית אחרת. היום אני עושה התוכנית 350 שלי. אחר כך אני רוצה לעשות משהו אחר, כתב בעברית אפילו.
מצוין. תודה רבה, דיוויד, שאתה מארח אותי בתוכנית שלך.
כן, אני שמח לאורח רונן.
נכון.
להיות על ידי, כדי לעזור לי, כי זה קצת קשה בשבילי לדבר, אפילו עם עברית פשוטה וקלה.
בסדר. Okay, אז אנחנו היום, התוכנית שלנו, אנחנו מכירים אחד את השני.
כן. אנחנו עשינו פעם אחת תוכנית ביחד.
נכון.
אבל זה היה באנגלית. זה שונה, זה קצת יותר קשה מתוכנית באנגלית.
נכון.
עם תוכנית באנגלית אפילו אני לא צריך לחשוב בתור זמן שאני מדבר.
כן.
אבל בעברית אני צריך לעשות הרבה במוח.
כן. זה בסדר. אוקיי, אוקיי, אז אנחנו נתחיל. דבר ראשון, דיוויד, מזל טוב לתוכנית ה-350 שלך. תספר לי מה מניע אותך לשדר ברדיו.
אני נהנה לקבל את ההזדמנות לפגוש אנשים שבדרך כלל לא הייתי יכול לדבר איתם. לפעמים אני מאמין שאולי אני אפילו משפיע על אנשים על ידי מה שאני עושה ברדיו. אני מכריח את עצמי להעמיק בנושאים שמעניינים אותי, ובתקווה גם מעניינים את הקהל שלי.
בהחלט מעניינים.
טוב, עוד שאלה?
בבקשה, עוד שאלה. דיוויד, תספר מה חשוב לך להביא בתוכנית שלך.
כן, חשוב לי להצמד לעובדות. אני לא רוצה שיתגו אותי כבעל דעות ימניות, ואני מנסה כמייטב כי יכולתי לא לתת לדעות שלי להפריע לנושא הנדון.
כן.
למעשה אני אוהב לרעיון אנשים שדעותיהם שונות במידה נחרט משלי. אני משתדל מאוד לקבל עורכים
בתוכנית שלי
מחצת השני במאמץ לגרום להם לתת דין והשפון על עמדתם הפוליטית.
כן, זה חשוב מאוד. איזה נושאים כן שמשותפים גם לישראל ולאוסטרליה ואתה רוצה לדבר עליהם?
רוב היהודים מקהילה שלנו תומכים מאוד בישראל, ולכן יש לנו דאגה לרוטט מדינת ישראל משותפת. עם זאת, מאז ה-7 באוקטובר, הקהילה שלנו נשאלת על ידי עלייה באנטישמיות
שנגרמה מהמלחמה המתחוללת בעזה.
דיוויד, מי שרוצה להקשיב לתוכניתך, Israel Connection, למה הוא יכול לצפות לשמוע בתוכנית שלך?
בדרך כלל לתוכנית יהיו שניים או אולי שלושה רעיונות, ולפעמים אני משתמש במוזיקה כדי לתת לתוכנית יתרון אחר. התוכניות שלי תמיד פתוח הננות בקפידה.
כן.
כך שאין הזדמנות אמיתית לאף אחד להתקשר. בכל מקרה, רוב הזמן זו תוכנית שהוקלטה מראש כי הנשים שראיינתי חיים באזורי זמן שלא תוממים לזמן שידור התוכנית שלי.
כן. אם ככה, אז הם יכולים להתקשר איתך רק באימייל או משהו כזה.
בדרך כלל אני לא שומע הרבה מאנשים אם אני אדבר על הרדיו.
כן. דיוויד, מה מצב הרוח בקהילה של מלבורן ואיזה ארגונים עוזרים לנו במאבק?
לאחר ה-7 באוקטובר, הקהילה מאוד מוהדת, למרות שאני עדיין רואה כמה מהארגונים הנהוגיות הקהילתית שלנו לוקחים יותר מדי שליטה ולא מכירים מספיק מתרומה מהבסיס.
האם אנשים בקהילה שינו את דעתם לגבי המאבק באנטישמיות?
הקהילה מודעת מאוד לעלייה הדרמית באנטישמיות בחברה שלנו. רצינותו של דאגה משותפת גרמה לכל שרוב היהודים מודאגים ממנו. הזינוק באנטישמיות גרם לכך שיותר יהודים שהיו בעבר קצת אמביוולנטיים לגבי ישראל הפכו לציונים גלויים יותר.
דיוויד, אני רוצה לפרסם את תוכניתך בשעה שלי. מה כדאי לי להדגיש?
מה שאני יכול לומר זה כדלקמן.
כן.
החדשות הוא צורך ניתוח, הוא תובנה בסיפורים חשובים על ישראל, Israel Connection. מוגש על ידי דיוויד שולברג בכל יום רביעי, אחר הצהריים בין השעות 16 ל-17, משודר ברדיו J-Air ב-80 בשמונה FM ומתייל בשידור חי ב-jair.com.au בשיתוף עם מומחים מכל תחומי החיים המתמחים בהיבטים שונים של החיים הפוליטיים בישראל, מתופעלים מאוזני האמנות והתרבות ברעיונות עומק העוסקים בנושאים הנוגעים ישראל ובנושאים הקשורים לישראלים ולמעורבותם ברחבי העולם. פודקאסטים של תוכנית קודמות זמנים באולפן אומני, אומני סטודיו.
שאלה אחרונה, דיוויד, מדוע חשוב שיהודי אוסטרליה ילמדו להבין עברית?
אני מרגיש שחשוב לי להיות מסוגל להבין עברית כדי שאוכל להעריך טוב יותר את העושר של התרבות היהודית שלנו. אני לא חושב שכל יהודי בחוץ צריך לדעת עברית טוב, אבל אני חושב שזה טוב להמשיכיות של העם היהודי שתהיה לנו שפה משלנו שבה נוכל להתבטא. הישרדותה וצמיחתה של השפה העברית היא נס מודרני ומשקף את עצם הישרדותו של העם היהודי לאחר השואה.
אז זה תורך עכשיו.
עכשיו תורי, כן, עכשיו תורי, בסדר.
אז יש לי כמה שאלות בשבילך. יש לך תוכנית,
נכון.
Open Minds באנגלית, בעברית שקט נפשי.
נכון, שקט נפשי.
אז מה מניע אותך להפיק תוכנית רדיו בעברית?
אני חושב שחסר לציבור קצת רקע שהוא לא בא מחדשות. מה שנקרא דבר אחר. דבר שלא שומעים בחדשות. זה דבר ראשון. ודבר שני, ישנם הרבה נושאים...
יותר לאט בשבילי.
כן, כן, אוקיי.
אפילו אם... בשביל האנשים ש...
נכון,
ששומעים או מנסים
לשמוע. אני אעשה עוד פעם. אם אני יותר מדי מהר, תגיד לי, אני אעצור.
בסדר.
חשוב לי להביא בתוכנית כל מיני תכנים שלא שומעים בדרך כלל בחדשות. גם מדע וגם גיאופוליטיקה וגם חברה. וכמובן מה שקורה בישראל, וגם מה שקורה באוסטרליה.
מעניין. איך אתה מוצא אורחים שידברו בתוכנית שלך?
יש אנשים שאני מכיר מישראל, יש אנשים שאני מכיר כאן בקהילה, או שאני נתקל בהם, ויש להם סיפור מעניין. כל מי שיש לו סיפור מעניין, אני מאוד שמח שהוא מגיע ומספר את הסיפור.
יש לך לפעמים הזדמנות לפגש פנים על פנים?
כן, יש לי הזדמנות להיפגש פנים אל פנים, מי שבא לאולפן, אז אני מאוד שמח לארח אותו, והיו לי כבר הרבה אנשים שהתראינו אצלי בתוכנית.
אילו נושאים אתה מעדיף לסקר בתוכנית שלך?
אני אוהב מדע, החל מגנטיקה וחלה בפסיכולוגיה ואחרים. אני אוהב גיאופוליטיקה בשביל לראות לאן הולך העולם. ואני גם אוהב חברה, בעיקר אנשים שקשה להם לדבר עליהם.
אתה מהנדס, כן?
אני הנדסאי חשמל מתח גבוה, מה שנקרא פה... באוסטרליה practical engineer. זה המקצוע שלי, אבל אני גם מתעסק בדברים אחרים. אני פועל בניין גם.
מה אתה מציע לאנשים שלומדים עברית ורוצים למצוא דרכים להשתפר?
הדבר הראשון הוא שלא יתביישו לעשות טעויות. זה בסדר לעשות טעויות בכל שפה חדשה. הדבר השני, שיחפשו אנשים כמוהם, וינהלו איתם שיחה. פשוט ייפגשו בשביל לדבר. זה דבר חשוב. והדבר השלישי, אפשר, ישנו איזשהו אתר שאתה סיפרת לי עליו, אתר שמביא עברית לאנשים שרק מתחילים ללמוד עברית. איזה אתר זה בדיוק? אתה זוכר את האתר? תספר לנו איזה אתר זה בדיוק, תזכיר לי את השם של האתר.
כן, זה אתר בישראל.
כן.
אתה מכוונת על חדשון.
חדשון, בדיוק. אז כל מי שרוצה לשפר את העברית שלו, כפי שאמר דיוויד, להיכנס לאתר חדשון בישראל, והוא יוכל ללמוד דרך שם.
אחת הדרכים אמור להיות לי לשפר את העברית שלי, היא להזין לשירים שבהם אני יכול לראות את המילים בו זמנית. רונן, שמעת על דרכים שונות לראות ולהזין לעברית בו זמנית?
יש מעט מאוד אתרים שעושים את זה, ששם אתה יכול לשמוע את השיר ולקרוא את המילים. לפעמים, כיוון שזה מהיר, אז אתה תצטרך לשמוע את זה שוב, עוד פעם ועוד פעם.
כן, רעיון טוב. מה אתה חושב על הרעיון שצריך להיות יותר שיתוף בין המציגי של JR?
כן. המציגים והשדרים של JR באים מהמון תחומים שונים, ולכל אחד מהם יש ידע שאני אישית הייתי מאוד רוצה להשתתף בידע שלהם. ולכן כששניים או שלושה נציגים של JR עושים תוכנית ביחד, אז התוכנית הרבה יותר עשירה. היא מכילה הרבה יותר דברים.
כמו אנחנו עושים עכשיו.
נכון, כמו שאנחנו עושים עכשיו.
אפילו זה קשה.
לא נורא, אנחנו מתגברים.
היית עושה הצגה ביחד עם אשטח דפנה. היום אתה הולך סולו.
כן.
איך זה משתווה? זה הרבה יותר עבודה?
אוקיי, דפנה הביאה אותי לרשת, לתחנת 3ZZZ. שם התחלנו. משם עברנו לכאן והייתה לנו תוכנית משותפת ביחד. ואחרי כמה שנים דפנה רצתה לעשות תוכנית שלה לבד. והייתה לה תוכנית שלה לבד, כי דפנה מתעסקת בעיקר במוזיקה ותרבות, ואני יותר במדע ופוליטיקה וכאלה דברים. עד שבסופו של דבר היא התעייפה, כי הייתה לה עבודה די קשה, ואז היא הפסיקה. ועכשיו אני לבד.
אז אנחנו ביחד לבד.
נכון, מין ביחד לבד כזה. זה באמת קצת יותר קשה, כי דפנה הייתה עושה חלק מהעבודה, ועכשיו אני צריך לעשות את כל העבודה.
בצד שני, אתה עצמאי, זה לא צריך להסביר מה אתה רוצה למישהו אחר.
כן, זה נכון, אבל אין לי עם זה בעיה. הנה, כמו שאנחנו יושבים פה ואנחנו עושים תוכנית משותפת ביחד, אני מאוד שמח לעשות תוכנית גם עם עוד מראיינים ועם עוד שדרים.
אז כדי לגמור,
כן,
יש אישי עוד שאלה.
כן.
מה המצב בישראל כרגע? טסת לישראל לפני חודשיים בערך.
חודשיים, שלושה, נכון.
באפריל. מה אתה שומע עכשיו מהמצב?
הציבור הכללי בישראל הוא מאוד מאוד תומך בהמשך ההגנה על ישראל והמשך המלחמה בטרור. אבל בגלל שישנם דעות שונות בישראל, אז כל מגזר, סקטור, רואה את הפתרון בצורה אחרת. וכיוון שאנשים מאוד מאוד מתוחים בישראל, אז הם מתבטאים בצורה מאוד מאוד תוקפנית. כי קשה להם עם המצב הזה וקשה להם עם חוסר הפתרון.
כל יום אני מתעורר, אני שומע על הרדיו,
נכון.
חדשות שונות, כן. זה מובלת,
נכון.
כדי איך להסתדר עם כל החדשות הרעות מהארץ.
כן, זה באמת החדשות הרעות מהארץ, ואחד הדברים שהציבור מאוד מאוד עצוב בגללו, זה שכל יום יש עוד חיילים שנהרגים. וזה לא נגמר. גם כאשר מפנים שטח כדי שלא תהיה מלחמה, עדיין נמשכת המלחמה. כי טרור זה טרור. טרור תפקידו, טרור מטרתו זה להרוג. וישראל מנסה להקטין את המלחמה, אבל זה פשוט לא הולך לה. ועוד בכלל עוד לא דיברנו על מה שיקרה בלבנון. כי לבנון זאת היא גם בעיה שעדיין לא נפטרה.
שמעתי סיפור על חייל שהוא היה בטלפון,
כן?
באותו זמן שהוא דיבר עם אמא שלו, הם הרגו אותו, החמאס.
כן, בוודאי. זה ההקלטות של הטלפון מהטבח. מהטבח של השביעי באוקטובר, יש המון הקלטות כאלה ששומעים איך אנשים מדברים בטלפון ויורים בהם תוך כדי שהם מדברים. באותו רגע ממש. היותר עצוב זה גם שההרג הזה נמשך. מפני שהרבה חיילים נהרגים כי להילחם בעזה, שהיא שטח בנוי, זה מלחמה מאוד מסובכת. זאת לא מלחמה פשוטה.
נגיע לסוף הרעיון.
תודה רבה.
אני נהניתי מאוד. אולי אנחנו יכולים לעשות את זה פעם אחרת.
ברצון רב נעשה את זה. תודה רבה, דיוויד, וכל טוב.
My friend Rafi Manri heard I was doing a Hebrew segment after all this time, and he sent me this message. Have a listen.
שלום דיוויד, זה רפי מנורי מהתוכנית העברית של 3ZZZ. אני רואה שלקח לך 350 תוכניות כדי ללמוד עברית, ואני מתחיל לפחד מהקומפטיציה. אני צוחק כמובן, מגיע לך כל הכבוד על התוכניות המעולות שלך. להתראות.
To finish today, I'm going out with a short excerpt from the first interview I ever did for the Israel Connection with Raoul Woodliff, who has moved on since to greener pastures. The subject is eerily reminiscent as it covers an issue after Israel's war in Gaza in 2014.
I wanted to start off with the investigation of the Israeli soldiers who have been held on suspicion of violation of IDF standards during last summer's operation in Gaza. Can you perhaps explain what's been going on in that arena?
Well, David, last summer's Gaza operation is one that has deeply affected the people of Israel. It was, as we know, the third operation that took place in just 6 years. And there's really a sort of national trauma surrounding what happened last summer. In the year since the war, there have been a number of investigations into the conduct of the army in Gaza. Most notably, recently, we had the report of the UN Human Rights Council, which suggested that both Israel and Hamas may have committed war crimes. Now, there was a lot of criticism against that report in Israel, suggesting that from the beginning, when it was set up, it was aimed at criticizing Israel and that it didn't produce a fair report.
Until next week, it's goodbye from the Israel Connection.